Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, back with you for another hour. We have novelist Francine Prose here to talk about her new book, My New American Life, which has a lot to do with American life and New York American lives of all kinds. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. Just want to thank everybody for supporting the station in our spring membership drive, if you have done that already. And we're just going to take less than 60 seconds here with a quick reminder that this is day two of our spring membership drive. We depend on your support to keep programs like this possible. I don't see Francine Prose up and down the commercial AM and FM dials anywhere. 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692. With your hopefully once a year, but at least for this year, pledge to WNYC, or you can pledge online at WNYC.org. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. You'll be automatically entered to win an iPad and a MacBook Pro laptop if you enter by noon tomorrow. So get it in right now, 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692. Or pledge online at WNYC.org. And again, thank you. Now, Brooklyn-based novelist Francine Prose takes another look at our culture in her new book, My New American Life. It's about a 26-year-old Albanian immigrant who has moved from the East Village to the suburbs of New Jersey to work as a nanny for a teenage boy whose mother has run off to Norway. Just a typical, you know, Bergen County story. Mom runs off to Norway. His banker dad worries about leaving him alone so much and is somewhat guilted into hiring Lula, the Albanian immigrant nanny, who fibs that her parents were killed by NATO bombs in Kosovo. How's that for a setup to an American life? Francine Prose joins me now. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on the show.
So jumping right into the story, Lula comes to New York to pursue the American dream, capital A, capital D. But of course, it's not so simple. What is her American dream when she sets out from Tirana, Albania?
Well, she wants to learn to drive, for one thing. She wants the car. She wants a house. She wants a chance. I mean, she's a little conflicted when she first comes here, but after she gets here and she gets a job working in what she calls the Mojito District, the East Village, and she says, well, after you've seen all these young, loud, under-tipping Wall Streeters drinking in the restaurant, who would choose Tirana over New York City?
And you're going to read us, I understand, from the very beginning of the book. Do you want to just jump in
beginning,
or are you going to set it up?
Well, because it's the very beginning, I think I can just read.
All right.
The day after Lula's lawyer called to tell her she was legal, three Albanian guys showed up in a brand-new black Lexus SUV. She'd been staring out her window at the drizzly afternoon and thinking that the mulberry tree on Mr. Stanley's front lawn had waited to drop its last few leaves until it knew she was watching. Obviously, this was paranoid and also egocentric, but in the journal that her immigration lawyer and her boss had suggested she keep, she wrote, October 2005. Does a leaf fall in New Jersey if no one is there to see? Don Cetabello and Mr. Stanley would go nuts for a line like that. They were always telling Lula she should write a memoir about her old Albanian life and now her new one in the United States. Don even had a title, My New American Life. Lula had a better title, Stranger in a Strange Land, but she'd already seen it in the public library. Maybe she could still use it. Maybe no one would notice.
So not only is she an immigrant, but a memoirist. That's very American.
Yes. I think her lawyer and her boss think it might help her case with immigration if she had another talent besides being a nanny.
As maybe very American is the not quite truth-telling of her stories. Does anything happen to us if we don't write a memoir about it or go on reality TV anymore?
or if we make it up and pretend it is a memoir, if we don't make it up and pretend it's a memoir.
Yeah. This is set during the Bush years after 9/11, and Lula is both European and Muslim as an Albanian. Was that part of why you picked an Albanian immigrant to write about?
Oh, sure. Well, I wanted to pick someone from Eastern Europe partly because I've spent a lot of time there and I have a lot of Eastern European friends and I feel that I know it, but also I wanted to pick someone from the least known and most quote-unquote exotic Eastern European country, which was Albania. I mean, plenty of people go to Prague now, but believe me, very few go to Tirana. And then the fact that Lulu was Muslim, half-Muslim, was just kind of gravy for what I was writing about.
And, of course, for the novelist, no one pays attention to the subtle markers of American culture like those trying to learn it. So an immigrant, you know, almost from a de Tocqueville standpoint, must be a godsend to a social satirist, right?
Well, that's exactly why I wanted to do it. I mean, all the things that you stop noticing when you live in a place, or even when you've been there for 6 months or a year, when you first arrive, I mean, anyone who's ever gone anywhere knows that all those things are very fresh and very clear and very new to you. And seeing it through Lulu's smart, passionate, been there, done that, but in some way very innocent eyes, gave me a huge opportunity to talk about the world we live in.
Francine Prose, my guest on WNYC, the great novelist. Her new book is My American Life. Of course, we hear about that menacing SUV in the beginning. It turns out there are three Albanian gangster slash construction workers in the car, and they ask her to hide a gun for them. Is that part of the immigrant experience, too, in a way that some of the danger you want to get away from in your home country follows you?
Well, you can never get away from it completely. I mean, everything follows you anywhere. But just from a purely novelistic standpoint, you know, there's that great Chekhov quote about if there's a gun on stage at the beginning, it's going to go off at the end. So when you're writing, or when I'm writing, I'm thinking, okay, what's going to make a reader want to keep reading besides sentences and themes? And one of those things was, oops, there's a gun in the house.
Now, you were part of that Second Thoughts on the Memory Industry symposium that we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago before it happened. You were listed. You did participate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of your writings about Anne Frank, but also the Balkans are known for holding on to memories of past injustices. And I think the theme of that weekend was, yes, of course we have to hold on to the memories of past injustices, but we have to figure out how not to commodify them and how not to get completely stuck in them and be able to move forward. So your character Lula talks about the blood feuds back home. I don't know, maybe that's part of the American dream too, letting some of that past go.
Well, Lula actually, when she talks about the blood feuds back home, she's kind of playing on American innocence and American, I have to say, ignorance about other places, because those blood feuds hadn't happened for several hundred years. So she's just kind of manufacturing these folk tales as if they were recent histories. I mean, the uncle of hers, cousin who she claims is involved in a blood feud, actually has a big Mercedes dealership in Tirana. So it's quite a different world from the one that she's kind of manufacturing and dredging up out of the past for American consumption.
Did you go to Albania to research this at all, or didn't you have to because it's really about New York?
I went to Albania. I spent 2 weeks in Tirana and went to a couple of places outside, and it was great. I found out I just could not invent Albania. I mean, there's a scene in the novel that takes place at an Albanian dance club in the Bronx, and that I did from YouTube clips. I just went, and it turns out that people go to these things and have their cameras. So I just Googled New Year's 2007 Albania and got, you know, but Albania I just couldn't invent. There's not that much information, so I had to go do the research myself.
Lulu's boss is Mr. Stanley, and I keep wanting to say Dr. Livingston, I presume, but he's an economist who goes to work for a bank. And Lula's not the only woman in the book who took off for a new life. The mother of Lula's charge, who's run away to Norway, is also looking for something, quote, clean and white, unquote, and not as muddled as America during the Bush years?
Yeah, she goes to the Norwegian fjords, and Lula thinks it's hysterical that someone would want something whiter than Mr. Stanley, who's pretty white.
I've read that you took inspiration from your students at Baruch College.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that was the most wonderful thing, because, I mean, many writers, novelists have found out that life kind of gives you the thing that you need when you're writing it. So about a few months into writing the book, I got a wonderful job in the Sydney Harmon program at Baruch College, which is a one-semester program in the honors program where they bring writers in to teach students. And I had 25 students in the class about, and I would say maybe five of them were native-born, and the rest were from all over the place and everywhere. I mean, South America, Latin America, Eastern Europe, former Soviet Union, and my students were geniuses. They were all functioning in a second language. I mean, as someone who speaks only one language, like so many Americans, I couldn't have been more impressed. They were all working full time, so they would be working all night and coming in and studying. And many of them had visa problems. So I was just essentially writing down everything they said at the end of the day and later putting it into the mouth of my character, Lula.
You know the old joke, right? What do you call somebody who speaks two languages? Bilingual. What do you call somebody who speaks three languages? Trilingual. What do you call somebody who speaks one language?
American.
Yeah. So as a novelist who likes to explore cultural disconnects, are you following the Dominique Strauss-Kahn story where the law is listening to an immigrant housekeeper against the word of a man of worldwide importance? You have the immigrant housekeeper in your book.
Well, you know, for one thing, if I prayed, I would be praying every day that this woman is documented. I'm not sure if she is or not, but you know, there's so many crimes committed against undocumented workers, and they can't report them because of their visa status. I mean, there's actually a very small thing that happens in the book where a busboy in the restaurant where Lula's working goes to fix a parking ticket, and the next thing he knows, he's being deported back to Mexico. And I gave a reading recently, and someone said, oh, that can't happen. And actually, I said, well, it does happen. It has happened. And I know a case in which it has happened. So there are many cases, I think, that like the case that happened to this unfortunate woman. But because they were lower profile and because the perpetrator is not, you know, the head of the IMF, they never get reported.
Yeah, that's good context. Francine Prose, her new novel is called My New American Life. She will be reading at the Greenlight Bookstore on Friday night at 7:30 p.m., tomorrow night at 7:30, she'll also be interviewed by our own Leonard Lopate, in addition to reading from her new novel at the Brooklyn Public Library this Saturday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So 4 o'clock with Leonard at the Brooklyn Public Library. What branch is that?
The Grand Army Plaza. Yeah, my branch.
Or at the Greenlight Bookstore tomorrow night at 7:30. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned.